We're going to start off today's show, though, now with Bill Resnick and James Offsink.
James Offsink, welcome to KABU.
Thanks for having me.
James Offsink is the president of Portland Forward, an organization that self-describes itself, and I quote, "The magnitude of challenges we face on a global and local level require a broad and bold progressive vision and the political will and strategy to see it through." James himself has worked at Common Cause Oregon with the Portland Resistance and is now working with the big coalition, the Portland Police Reform Network, that's challenging the Portland Police in the current negotiation of the Police Association's union contract with the city. So, James Offsink, tell us about the police contract battle, why it's so important, the various provisions that are in the contract that you're challenging. Well, that's it.
Thank you for the question, Bill. There's a lot of issues with the Portland Police Association contract, and actually nationally, police contracts tend to be kind of the tip of the spear, like one of the ways that justice is really circumvented across the country. And so specifically for the Portland Police contract, like a lot of contracts nationwide, it lacks really key transparency and accountability measures that allow police to operate often not in the public interest without any kind of accountability. So the main things that we're calling for are for there to be true accountability, where officers who behave outside of the public interest can legitimately be fired for poor actions or other types of discipline taken against them. And we're looking for independent civilian oversight, especially in cases that are the most important to the public, like use of deadly force. Our current contract basically cuts the public out of the process, even though there is an independent civilian process for some police conduct. It's in our Portland Police Association contract that in cases of deadly force, it specifically excludes the Independent Police Review Board from participating. So we want to make sure that those things are out. We also want, we call for a number of other things in our demands, including that there's drug testing of officers after use of deadly force. You know, if a truck driver is in an accident, it is assured that the first thing that happens when police respond to the scene is that the truck driver takes a drug test to make sure that they were operating, you know, with full use of their faculties. We think that the same thing should be true for police officers. After use of force, we want to be sure that they're not, impaired in some way, that maybe they made the wrong judgment.
Any kind of force, not just homicide, murderous force, but shootings, beatings as well.
That's
severe,
right.
Beatings,
tasings. I mean, there's a lot of things that are considered less than lethal force, which, if you look nationally, actually do kill a lot of people,
including those non-lethal weapons.
Exactly.
Yeah.
And that's one of the ways that I first became connected to this issue, was actually participating in peaceful protests after the election of Donald Trump, and, you know, being subject to all kinds of use of police force that were supposedly, you know, less than lethal. But certainly when you have somebody firing, you know, bullets at you, it's hard to know at the outset if they're rubber or, you know, if they will in fact kill someone or hurt someone.
In fact, James, the current practice, or at least the current practice until recently, was to give the cop who did it, you offer him a lot of coffee right away to drink, and they then secrete the police officer for 2 days before he has to submit to any tests or, in fact, tell the story. That is, he gets to see his lawyer within 2 days and doesn't have to say a word. Is that still happening?
Well, it's a little bit contested at the moment. So in the previous police contract, the one from 2016, they did change what was known as the 48-hour rule, that basically said as part of the contract that police could not be required to respond to any questions. And that was based on a whole bunch of debunked criminology science that was intended to favor moving away from police accountability. And that's no longer in the contract. And so in general, they are questioning police within a shorter period of time from when the thing happens.
But only police.
Correct.
Yeah, well, that's nice.
it's good. It's positive.
It feels good to be a cop, not to be questioned by someone who might not believe and help you spin a story.
Yeah, and that's another thing, actually, that we're pushing for in the contract is really that there is the appearance of two systems of justice, which we think is inherently unfair. There's one system of justice that you go through if you are a member of the public who is being questioned by police, and that includes, you know, extended interview times. It includes all kinds of things that are specifically barred in the police association contract. So for instance, in the police association contract, they're required to have at least a 10-minute break in any questioning session with an officer who's been, you know, suspected of doing something wrong. They're also required, they limit the duration of the interview periods. And, you know, all of those things, if that is what is most likely to produce the truth, then we think that it should be true both for police officers and also for members of the public. So if police officers are required to get 10-minute breaks in every hour of interview sessions, then we think that the same should be true for civilians.
Agreed. Let's go back to the Civilian Review Board. Their disciplinary, the measures that they think would be required for whatever the action was, that's just advisory, basically, is my understanding. On the other hand, they would get subpoena power. And subpoena power, it seems to me, is powerful, powerful thing, because you get testimony under oath, I believe, and the truth can come out if you subpoena enough people and have somebody who's questioning, you know, having the experience and capacity to really bring out what really happened in this situation.
Yeah, definitely. Part of what we're asking for is for our Civilian Review Board, which is the independent police review board, that they would have the ability to compel officer testimony. Because right now they can just ask officers to answer their questions, but the officers are not required to provide answers. The officers are required to show up, but not to answer any of the questions that are offered. Mm. So you can imagine how that works against getting to the bottom of what the truth really is.
I'm sure they show up with their lawyers, more than one on each side. They need protection. So this is Bill Resnick for The Old Mole. I'm talking to James Offsink. We've been talking about the struggle over the police contract, why it's so important, what the network is doing, the Portland Police Reform Network, as well as what we hope the community will do, which is stand up for justice. James, let's get to the negotiation. It's the city and the Portland Police Association that's negotiating. The network is not negotiating, and in fact may not be able even to observe the negotiations. That appears to be part of the whole system that the police will not give up and have power over. What are the powers then of the network? You did testify before the city council about the necessary changes, and Joanne Hardesty, who's been crucial, I think, to raising these issues, she is on the council, and she will certainly be demanding that the negotiators for her and the other council members bring up all of these issues and fight for them and don't compromise them in ways that make them, you know, without any real significance. You have another power, though, I think, as well. I mean, you have already made those demands, and Joanne is, in one way or another, championing them before the council and making those demands as well. And the council still has other people supporting it, Joanne, in that endeavor.
So we have a lot of momentum in this specific contract. And in the past, I think that how you described it is right, Bill, that the community was not engaged in the process until the very end. After the contract had been negotiated, it came to city council. And at that point, city council is only a up or down yes or no vote. Should we accept this contract that's been negotiated or not? That is a very difficult time for the community to come in and be able to say, point, city council is only a up or down yes or no vote. Should we accept this contract that's been negotiated or not? That is a very difficult time for the community to come in and be able to say, you know, we like some aspects of this contract, but not other aspects. So this time, the Police Reform Network, which is a constellation of different groups, faith communities, communities of color, good government groups, who have come together to say, no, we want to make sure that we can materially influence the contract as it's being negotiated, so that when it comes to city council at the end, should it come to city council, which it actually, it doesn't have to, because police, if they reach an impasse where they can't negotiate, then it goes to an arbitrator down the line. But if it does come to city council, we want to have it be as good as possible when it gets to council. So we've already had, through Commissioner Hardesty's office, as you mentioned, she's been a real ally on these issues, and she was a leader for a long time, even before being elected to council. And she has helped bring in national experts on police reform who can look at this nationwide and say, you know, here are the problems that we're seeing across cities and counties everywhere, and help inform what Portland should be doing. And that happened late last year, and the council was really receptive. Since then, the council has actually agreed to host two community listening sessions, which is unprecedented, at least in recent history in Portland. When a police contract came up, they invited community members to come in. There were several hundred community members across two different nights in November and December. And we're looking forward to actually the release probably this week of the results of those community listening sessions, which we expect to add to the public record just how important it is that the council adopt real accountability measures, increase civilian oversight, and have transparency through this whole process. So to, in summary, kind of answer your question, yes, it is very important for our movements to be as bold and broad as possible, and we really welcome anyone who's interested in these issues to get involved. We have an event coming up through Portland Forward, actually, on February 19th. We're hosting a conversation about what people want to see change in Portland police and policing. And we'd love to have people come to that. You can get the information about it on our Facebook page. It's going to be at the Alberta Street Pub at 6 p.m. on Wednesday, February 19th. But if, you know, people want to be involved in other ways, if they want to really bird dog and participate or track what's happening in the contract, we've just recently found out that the sessions will alternate, likely alternate between being open and being closed. So public,
the negotiating sessions,
negotiating sessions for the contract,
and some of them will be open.
Well, it's not 100% finalized yet. We were just in a, we got to observe a ground rules meeting that the city and the PPA were negotiating just last Friday. And it is tentative. It looks like they'll alternate sessions between being open and being closed to the public. So we're definitely still invested in how do we get high quality information about what the city is proposing to make sure that they're tracking to the things that the community thinks is important. But it does look promising that at least some of the sessions will be open to the public, which is unlike they were in the last contract negotiation.
James, one final issue. For me, something extremely important is reducing police numbers, having half as many police or less, and replacing them with helping services for the homeless, for people with mental health crises, for people with drug use arrests. They should be replaced with workers who are much better qualified and capable of helping those people and getting them whatever they need to straighten out, which most of them, in fact, want.
That's exactly right, Bill. You've really hit the nail on the head about the importance of, in our society today, unfortunately, police are sent in to lots of issues that they have not the training nor the resources to solve. So it is very important, and I'm encouraged by the pilot program that the city has adopted, the Portland Street Response, which looks to send in unarmed, non-militarized resources into situations where somebody is experiencing a mental health crisis instead of sending in a police officer with a weapon. So I do think that that is a promising development, and we will, our network will be looking in the future for how do we shift resources from the punitive kind of injustices of our current system into social services and other resources that really get to the root of why people are calling the police in the first place. We don't, you know, police are have very limited ability to solve someone who's, you know, going through a severe addiction withdrawal, right? But we do have services in our city, or I mean, and we should have more, but there are places that can help with those types of situations before they become emergencies that require a gun.
James Opstink, again, you're a great credit to this community and doing really good work, and your organization as well, and the Police Reform Network. Thanks a lot. And we'll be talking again as these negotiations go on to rally the people. Thanks a lot.
Thanks so much for having me on the show, Bill, and for continuing to track this very important issue.